The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast, hosted by one of my very best friends, Mark Evan Jackson. Also here is Neutral Janet.
Correct. End of sentence.
Neutral Janet, what do we have coming up on today's episode?
Various people will say assorted words in a specific order regarding the TV program, The Good Place. End of description.
Okay. And who's today's guest?
Today's guest is a person who works on the TV program, The Good Place, in some capacity. End of guest description.
Oh, sounds exciting. Thank you, Neutral Janet. On to the show.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today, we'll discuss Chapter 43, Season 4, Episode 4, Tinker, Tailor, Demon Spy. Written by Cord Jefferson, directed by Morgan Sackett, including guest cast Ben Koldyke, Kirby Howell-Baptiste, Brandon Scott Jones, Josh Siegel, Tia Sirkar, and Jason Manzoukas. One of the demons, Glenn, defects from the bad place and arrives at the experiment in the medium place. He tells Eleanor that Michael is actually Vicky in a Michael suit. The gang separate and interrogate Michael and Glenn until they can get to the bottom of it. Eleanor uncovers a few secrets about Michael, and Janet accidentally turns Glenn into goo. Then Jason realizes that Janet is the real infiltrator, Bad Janet. After handcuffing Bad Janet, Jason and Michael set off to rescue Good Janet from the bad place. My guests today are Tom Zawacki from the props department, writer of the episode Cord Jefferson, and writer Josh Siegel, who plays Glenn. Josh, Cord, and Tom, welcome. Everything is shut up, Glenn. Josh Siegel, I just finished a project working with a bunch of 12 and 13-year-old young women who are having the time of their lives working on set. They, in between takes, because of their age, they go to school and they have to run back, back and forth to a classroom with an on-set teacher. And soon, after a couple more weeks, they will have to go back to real school, which I think will be absolutely awful for them. And they're going to be telling stories like, when I was on set and at my real job and that sort of thing. Is that what your life is like going back to the writer's room?
a little, except that, I am so grateful when I get to retreat to my actual job.
Is it that?
I have such a complicated...
Is this your first acting job?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. I mean, you can't overstate how much this is my first acting job. I did a little acting in college and
there's something there. It's not like it would be maddening if you were this good at it right out of the gate.
That is so unnecessarily kind. The thing that I tried to do this year when, I think the room got excited about this idea for an episode. It was like one of the few genres we hadn't dipped our toe into, this sort of like contained thriller or whatever. And Mike just kept pitching, and that instead of like it being, an important character with gravitas that it's all centered around, at least in the first two acts, that it's
forking
Glenn, and he would laugh so hard, and I'm like trying to parse what that laugh means.
It's not 100% good spirited.
No, it's I think it just really tickled him, that idea. And so, this is like the culmination of this insane journey that I've been, forced at gunpoint to take.
Cord, Josh just used an interesting term, contained thriller. Like, this is definitely heisty, right?
Yeah.
This is a far more plot-driven episode than, I mean, there have been a lot of plots, but this is, we get supposition in this, like, maybe this is what happened. I don't feel like we've been quite this contained thrillery before, right?
No. I think, this is a show that ends on a lot of cliffhangers, and so there has always been an element of mystery involved from the beginning, but I think that this one feels very much like a Jean Le Carré novel. Mm-hmm. I think that was the intention that Mike had going in. I know he's a huge fan of his, and so...
That's the reference to the title, right?
Exactly. So I think that having, like, a contained thriller, as Josh put it, is relatively new for the program. And so I knew that it was going to be kind of an undertaking to accomplish, because, you know, we have 21 minutes to accomplish a Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy story, which is difficult, but hopefully people think we pulled it off.
Oh, I think we were sitting down to do this a moment ago and saying, like, this show, man, like,
so good.
There's so much. It's so funny to, you know, put ourselves back in the neighborhood then at the beginning of this episode, and they're trying to, you know, yes, have them bond, but also torture these poor humans. And, like, Pictionary is the, like, that's torture, right? I mean, that in and of itself feels like a little bit of torture. And then, of course, it's Bad Place or Good Place amplified, that the things you draw come to life. We see Mariah Carey's lower back tattoo. I wanted to ask about the T-shirts, the John and Tahani and Jianyu and Chidi and Brent and Simone. Where did those T-shirts come from first? It feels like it's the New York City subway typeface. Like, do you know where that
I don't know the original example, but it certainly has taken hold, like, every fandom.
Everything. Like, I first saw it with, like, Game of Thrones or something. Yeah. I feel like with a bunch of names on it.
So with the Game of Thrones direwolves.
Okay.
Like, it's down to that specific.
I don't know what you'd call it, where that tradition started or what was first. Tom, are those shirts yours or is that wardrobe?
The shirts were wardrobe, but okay. We had a bunch of things in that scene because, like, when the animated horse came out, which wasn't there, a bunch of things got knocked over. So we had, like, multiple Pictionary easels and that, like, little timer that, like, Janet spins over. We had, like, three or four of those.
Oh, yeah.
We had, like, all these things ready that would break, but then, like, we tried to have a bunch of things on the table that could get knocked over but, like, not shatter and we can bring them back up. But the, like, neatest thing that we had is we had these giant Sharpies that were, like, dried out so, like, our actors could, like, draw onto the paper, but they didn't actually draw anything.
That's so Neidenagel can
do
it later.
So Neidenagel could go in, and he drew very lightly with a pencil what was going to be there, the butterfly, the horse, so they had, like, somewhere to go, so they weren't just ridiculously scribbling, and it saves time in between takes from not up there ripping pages every 2 seconds. So it's just like a dry Sharpie, because none of it matters. So it was like a fun
little
scene.
But it's fascinating. So what we've seen in advance, we're recording this a few weeks before the episode will air, we've seen a bit of a rough cut. So we see that we saw a temp butterfly, a pretty good horse.
And a pretty solid horse.
Great horse. Apparently David Neidenagel said it was his favorite thing that he's worked on the show.
He was really excited on that day because he always has his phone where he shows not the temp animation, but the animation they usually did with his daughters. Yeah. But he just had it there. And it was just like, I think it was just like running by, like, in a field. And I was like, that's a good.
The horse is horrifying.
As far as just like how you guys wrote it and then how he took it and what he turned it into, I was like, perfect.
Story about the horse, the origin, the provenance of that original horse drawing is also Josh.
No.
Yeah.
My childhood pony, Daisy.
Mike made us all do drawings of horses, knowing that there are a few of us in the room who are particularly bad at drawing. Josh and me being one of the couple of the top two, and he knew that one of us would draw something really awful, and it turned out Josh drew the most awful horse, and so it was based on Josh's drawing.
Yeah, I think Mike had a fear that, like, if it looked like a deliberately bad drawing, it wouldn't be as funny.
Sure.
And so he just went around the room and said, okay, try your best to draw a horse.
I think that's legitimate.
Yeah.
My horse would not be great.
No.
Yeah.
But what Neidenagel did with it, I think, is really fascinating because that horse appears to have, like, a rainforest frog tongue that lashes out at Jason at one point. And if you look closely,
exactly,
at least in what we've seen, mm-hmm, the hooves of the horse look like giant extracted molars. Like they look.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
they're like almost like mini lobster claws.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. Creepy, but it definitely looks like it's made of enamel. Yeah. Like it's pretty horrifying.
Well, Neenuggle has such a good sense of humor. I don't know if we talk about it enough, even in the room. But like when you give him a comedy game, like Chidi accidentally creates a beast that should not exist and clearly wants to die, Neenuggle's like, great, watch this, you know, and that. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a creature that should not be. And gets its, you know, it's meets the end that it needs to in the episode.
The point of this exercise is to, I think, torture them and thereby make them, you know, get closer together and bond. Brent feels too comfortable and refers to Chippy as my brother. To which Kirby, as Simone says, oh no.
Oh no.
No, 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 no.
He even gave me that like sort of hesitation like delivery, which is good, which comfortable, so but funny. Like my brother, like just like stumbled on it more.
It's so funny.
He was really good.
And then you see Ben behind her look like briefly, oh no, but then like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
what's the big deal?
What?
What's the
deal? We're friends. This is how friends talk.
Vice president of helping.
Brother.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, you can't even call him brother now?
Yeah. What kind of place is this?
It's a wonderful chaos sequence that ends with Brent saying, horrifyingly, you want me to kill it? I've shot a lot of racist. Which just feels so grounded and gross, right?
Yeah.
But so real to his character. You can totally see that guy.
Because he wouldn't need to put them down if he was that rich guy who had a lot of horses. There's also a guy to put the horse down. He's like, no, I got it.
Yeah.
Give me the gun. I want to.
I'm really good at this part.
Yeah.
We learned that one of the reasons that he was how he was that he got super wasted and no one gets cut off in the good place, says Janet. And then there are two, really... deeply meaningful and explanatory lines about Brent. One, Janet says that she's just glad that he stopped asking her to go to dinner to discuss her career. And Michael says, at least he stopped saying daddy like all the time. That's okay. Oh, man. We see an alert that says unknown train arriving, which seems like an allusion to my upcoming podcast, Unscheduled Off-World Activation.
That's right. That's right.
I have a question for you, and I mean this in the best of all possible ways. Is that you we see pumping on the hand cart?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
It is. Mm-hmm.
And is it you getting off the cart onto the platform?
It is.
The reason I ask is it seems athletic.
Well, it was not an easy day for me. There was a sizable gap between what we in the room referred to. I think Joe Mandy coined that the hand cart, the ur-e. Oh, that's what we kept calling it because
that's
of
like
him.
Calling a water cooler a glug glug.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
ur-e.
Between the ur-e and the platform, I want to say it was
two feet, and you did it blind.
I did it. That hood comes over my eyes. Yeah.
I love you. You seemed tall, and that felt like I saw you get off, and I was like, that's a stunt, man.
You'd
absolutely think.
We had a funny thing because there were also like, you don't see it in the cut, but there were some where they were like, let's get somewhere you make it with confidence, which, by the way, not in my wheelhouse, confidence. And there were others where it was like, what if you almost make it, but then you fall down? And I was like, well, that might just happen.
Yeah, that's just going to happen.
If we roll camera, don't worry about it. And there was exactly one time where I went to take the step, and then I stopped myself, and I was like, oh, guys, sorry, I got scared. Let's take it again. And Ted goes, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, a real actor would have felt where it was on his own, but it's totally fine if you don't take it again. Is like, oh, yeah, enjoyable ribbing.
And also a point about the ur-e is that it's actually controlled by a gas pedal and a brake. And so
it's not actual
hand cart. So nailing exactly when you have to take your foot off the gas is kind of complicated.
But is Virgil driving it or are you driving it?
It's on a track. You just mash on the gas and then you let go of the gas and you're supposed to
That's very difficult.
Glide into position. Yeah. You should take more credit for this. It's a difficult maneuver.
You're very tall.
Oh, yeah. And there were like nine times where it went pretty bad. And then they took the one where it didn't.
It's such a great use of the low status, kindly Glenn elements of Josh that you mentioned, because here's this shadowy figure and you get off and it's a thing. And then, of course, your glasses get trapped in your hood. Like, it, you know, it instantly becomes slapstick almost.
Exactly.
And it's Glenn, which is a giant surprise. Glenn wants to talk to Eleanor in private. She refuses. You're like, it's going to get like it's going to be a very awkward social situation. And finally, you say it. That's not Michael. That's Vicky in a Michael suit. And I love your delivery of like, see, I tried to like now it's a thing. And
now we all feel weird.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting to play that back a billion times and look around that gaggle of people and see their reactions. See how Ted as Michael reacts. See how Janet as, I guess, Janet for the moment. Well, as we learn later in this episode, like, just to see how those people go, like, what? It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Also, what were the alts for pig urine? Because a hot glass of pig urine, or really any urine, will do. It's just so gross and great.
The only alt that I remember was pig piss. Everybody was really, because I mean, let's get real. Piss is a funnier word than urine, and so I think that it was. But Mike drew the line. I think at piss.
Yeah,
it's gross.
Like, it is gross.
Piss makes me uncomfortable right now. Saying somehow
exactly.
It's crass, right? Like it's
definitely crass. It's more crass, but it's funnier. I think it's a funnier word. And that's
the maybe that's the difference between Glenn and like Sean. Sean would say piss, but Glenn's saying urine because he's a little sweeter.
Eleanor takes Michael aside and she says, "Don't worry, I trust you." And he does some like I love Ted's bad acting. I love his when he's upside down on stuff, when he's low status, and he's like, "You're devastated. You're devastated right now," or any of his Dick Tracy's. But his saying, I hate the way you think, Shellstrop, is so funny.
It's great.
And Jason continues to be an overt dummy with, if you're a devil, then how come you're not wearing Prada? Which to him is like gotcha, checkmate. Yeah. You know, so dumb.
I got one of the biggest laughs at the table read that I think I've ever heard.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think I think Joe Mandy pitched it out like at the last minute, like when we were rewriting the script for like the fourth time before the table read.
Because
it killed.
It wasn't that long ago that Jason was so outside the realm of what was going on that he was like, guys, I'm the last person to say this, but I think we have to call the cops.
Yeah. Like, that's right. So where do you think we are, I think is what he said back then. And attention to detail, you know, by who I will, you know, refer to as the real actors in the show. The moment right after he says that, I think KB has this moment where she... I think in the script it said she no look hands him a caramel, and he pops it in his mouth. And even just in that moment, Kristen was like, "All right, what's funnier?" And then she had like three different ways that she could no look hand him a caramel. One was like, "Is it funnier if I just like toss it and he's there for it? If I wiggle it like a dog getting a treat and then he knows to snatch it?" You know, she just like that one nonverbal moment, and she had like so many ways to make it.
What made it? The toss, I think, right?
Yeah, the toss, I think. It's great.
So one wonders why Glenn would help them. He thought that he was doing the right thing, that humans deserve torture, deserve their time in the bad place. But he's not sure he believes that anymore. Also, Sean is so mean. The bad place is trying to sow chaos. Glenn has proof. He goes to show Eleanor proof that that's Vicky in a Michael suit, because here's Michael. I mean, the photos are completely useless. And we flash back to the making of the suit. There are some interesting uses of flashbacks in this one. I thought it was a great detail, too. Like, obviously, when we're doing it, Tia's standing in, and she's saying her lines, and then she's sort of making a move with her hand, and then she steps out, Ted steps in, and Needknuckle marries the two. Tia is wearing, by the way, an interesting prop. It's a sort of a wet suit. It's Ted's suit. And attached to the collar of it is a rubber mask with a wig and that sort of thing. It's funny on its own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She never really is able to like fully pull it up and over herself, but it's very weird to watch her, you know, drinking a cup of coffee, sitting in her chair, wearing basically an empty Ted Danson on her back.
True, because it was like weird enough to put on her the bottom half. It wasn't like, all right, we'll take it off in between takes. She's like kept it odd, but she still has like the Ted Danson-esque head like dangling behind while she's like in her chair, just that crafty, getting nuts or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's normal. That's our show.
Did Gay make that also?
That was just a combination of, because it was like wardrobe, because it was probably just actually one of Ted's suits. And then we got the mask, and then hair was involved with putting like a good wig on it. That was like a real team effort of like everybody.
Because it's
that
not
thing.
A throwaway. Like if you were to pull it up, it's a reasonable facsimile of what a skinned Ted Danson.
Because we never know how far it'll go, and we obviously know it'll become CG at some point. But even if you see it, like if she turns or something, you don't want it to just be like, oh, that's just a mask they got at a Halloween store or something silly. Like you want it to at least work for a handful of frames on a turn.
We ended up shooting a lot more of that scene to connect to an earlier episode from, I think, last season the Pandemonium episode when I call using caller ID, pretending to be the judge. And we shot right up until the moments would connect. But of course, things get cut for time. But it was fun to do. It was fun to sort of remember that and try to connect it. Ted playing mischievous, Ted playing Vicky playing Michael is a delight. Like he moves differently, he talks differently. It's really funny.
It's incredible.
It's great. I mean, there was a lot of like special attention. And I think, you know, Cord and other folks were in his ear a little bit about like, okay, remember, Vicky has these particular cadences if you want to try them. And then sometimes he would almost be too good at playing Vicky mastering Michael, and we had to say, well, let's give ourselves some room to be, this is the version where, remember, this is the first second you're trying it, so be less amazing at it, you know, right now.
Hey, Ted Danson, act worse.
Yeah.
less polished.
Yeah.
There are interesting alliances, and some of it is, you know, Michael trying to keep things from the humans to protect them. Some of it is like later we realize that he doesn't really understand the rules of lying. But in the present, Eleanor says that what Glenn is saying can't be true because Michael would have told them. He, you know, and then Glenn's like, well, Janet has the phone records, and Michael immediately confesses that he did lie. This could all be solved by calling the judge, right? That's what Glenn wants. Like, we got to call in the cops and say, come adjudicate this. But that would press reset on the whole thing, and the humans feel like they've made progress, right?
It was all about, like, I remember it was a difficult story to break. I mean, you know, in the way that all of these, when we're ever, like, stepping outside, which is often, where whenever we're stepping outside, just, hey, we're a funny show, even with effects or whatever. So now we're putting on our thriller hats and our mystery hats and trying to figure out, okay, well, what are the stakes of any of these decisions? Why can't they just get out of this? And that one felt really clear to us, you know, that, like, they have made progress. They don't want to give it up, you know. And then I'm always a fan of, you know, then it turns out also that there's other versions of those stakes that are really emotional that come out later. So,
and on top of all that, you also wanted both sides to have compelling reasons for why you'd make that decision so that it was never clear who exactly was right. You wanted both sides to feel like unreliable narrators or reliable narrators. You wanted Glenn to feel just as believable as Michael. And that was an extra sort of layer of difficulty.
You don't know who to trust, right? I mean, even Tahani has a great line of like, he might be our friend, or he might be a lying trickster who just looks like our friend, a classic Mary Kate Olsen.
Which is so good.
Why Mary Kate? Why not Ashley? Just because K's are funny?
Yeah. It could be. Mary Kate is just a funnier name than Ashley. Yeah.
That's true.
Much
had a
like
funnier
Yearn
cadence.
Piss. Yeah.
but you're right. Comedy. It's we don't know who to trust. Eleanor remembers that, like, that's what she wanted to do, but then, but Michael stopped her and he said, let's watch a movie. Let's relax. Let's hang out. You do not know who to trust. It's a real, you know, once you start to suspect people, have you ever played the game of like looking at anywhere, a movie theater or a crowd and go like, three of those people are aliens. You go, oh, everybody looks weird. Like as soon as you start to suspect, like as soon as you inject doubt, it feels like that to me.
Yeah. And, you know, also I think like if, you know, if we're doing our jobs right, it's not only this particular episode, but it's also, you know, this is a part of Eleanor's arc as her transformation from Arizona trash bag to leader of this group. You know, this you could argue is her biggest challenge to date. Not only is she without Michael, but she might be have to be against Michael, you know, and she doesn't have Chidi. And she has a bunch of well-meaning, you know, I really like that
well-meaning
line.
But predictably unhelpful.
Yes, exactly. You know, and she crushed that every time. But yeah, I mean, this is like a even just as a fan of the show, it was fun to watch her character be challenged.
And it happens so quickly. Early on, she takes Michael aside and she goes, "Don't worry, I trust you." And then Michael reads that later where he's like, "I'm faking it." And she's like, "No, man, I'm serious. This is happening." Like that happens really close together.
Yeah. At the end of Act One. And she's, yeah, I mean, and you get the sense, her performance is so layered, you know, it'll be fun to rewatch and see when she's playing Eleanor as truly confident, truly knows what she's doing, and other times when she's like, no, that's the Eleanor who is faking it but has to right now because the time is running out and this is as important as it gets. Yeah, it's, you know, again, if we do our jobs right, it was funny and also pretty dramatic.
Speaking of doing your jobs right, Tom Zawacki, you have a weird job.
I do.
We go into the bedroom where they've sequestered Michael, and we see Derek's sex toys, which is horrifying in and of itself. Obviously, there are magnetic handcuffs and a sex diaper, Dipe Life. But also, like, looking at that wall of Derek and Mindy's vice shelf, I see a bowling ball whereon one of the holes is covered with some brand of penis holster with clear tubing connected to, like, a dotted bath toy. There's like an Ooga clown horn. I see a paddle or mirror sporting a couple dozen, were those golf tees or something?
Yep.
A lot of feathers. Up top, there are like five dolls or puppets. What the
fork
were they? And what else is on that? Like, is that, do you get that script and go, okay, this is going to be good?
So this is a team effort between props and set dressing. So set dressing put out some stuff.
Okay.
But all of the very weird stuff was all Gay Perello literally by herself. Whatever was going on with the rest of the episode, it was like busy-ish. And so the rest of our department like was just doing stuff. So she like went to the store, bought all this weird stuff, set up like 2 or 3 6-foot folding tables outside our little gold room on another stage, and was literally had a hot glue gun. I was like, yeah, golf tees on a waffle iron. Yeah, okay.
Is that what that was? A waffle iron?
I think it was a waffle iron.
Okay.
So she just started gluing weird stuff to other weird stuff. And the diaper she made with the wind chimes on it, which is a good little like subtle callback to how his penis used to be wind chimes, and all the things. So like she literally made all of
Did
those
you just
by herself.
A subtle callback. That's a glaring
subtle callback. I don't think anybody caught it. Nobody saw. Nobody knows about penis wind chimes. But yeah, that was all her. And it was one of those things where I was like, okay, cool, ready to help. Oh, you're done? You nailed it. Yeah.
Truly inspired. I remember walking onto set to rehearse, and I hadn't seen any of the sex toys before that, and it was like, I felt like so excited to be working on this show. It's the only show where you'd walk in and you have there was also one that was just a bunch of whisks connected to a bicycle.
Yes,
here.
That we still have. I think she saved that. That's like in her prop trailer, I think.
That's what he loops back in for because it's chime time.
He's it's like all these different whisks, and one of them's like pink and it's silicone as opposed to metal.
You don't need to know that.
And when that shelf is that weird,
I need to know that.
There's like normal-ish stuff up there, but it all becomes weird. Like there's like a air canister that you'd use to fill like balloons at like a kid's birthday party, and that's just like up there, and it's like. Yeah, they're filling
association,
something.
It gets gross.
Yeah, so it's just like, oh, that's not weird. But when you connect it to everything else, it's like, that's perfect.
This next part is what I was referring to about Michael not understanding, you know, all of humanity, which is a sort of an ongoing theme of his arc, in at least in season 4, if not throughout this television program. But he explains why he did what he did. Sean was going to use the Michael suit to torture him. He didn't want to tell them because Sean threatened that he would just erase the human's memories of that. Thanks for that cool trick, by the way. And a month ago, Michael was pretending not to be able to deal so that Eleanor would step up and be a leader. That was also a lie. He really was having a meltdown and just owned it of like guilty, you know, that kind of thing. And then he delivers this great thing where he says, yes, I lied, but that was an inspirational lie. Like, so great running into you, we should get coffee sometime, or all of Instagram. All of Instagram is an inspirational lie. And then he goes, he's like, yes, but that lie was only to cover my 2 earlier lies. That's got to be okay, right? And the reactions, you see Eleanor go like, what? And you see Tahani go like, I'm not sure I understand that. And you see Jason go like, yep, that's how, yep, that's how it works.
I love that. I love just him nodding in the background. Like, yeah, exactly.
That is how lies work.
I mean, you know, again, from just like being in the room, you know, in the writing room, it as fun and funny as all that, you know, and I don't take credit for it, but the, it is also like a weird, lovely way to check in with exactly where Eleanor is in her evolution and exactly where Michael is in his evolution. You get to see that, like, you know, Michael is interested in becoming better, but, you know, still capable. You know, he came from such a dark and deep hole, you know, when it comes to, like, being good, that, like, an effortless, you know, lie tossed off, if it serves him, is totally in his wheelhouse. He's happy to do it. And in fact, you know, you see in episode two, if you go back and watch, you know, he's taking that opportunity, I think, to not admit, you know, some things that are sad and weird inside him, and instead, oh, I'll just, like, watch this. I'll just lie real fast and we'll get out of this no problem. And it does come back to bite him. So hopefully, you know, it's all still reflecting all these different ways that, you know, actual people are, you know, need to work on being better and stuff.
Yeah. And to add on to that, if you've been watching the show since season one, I think that you realize what a huge regression this is for Michael to lie this way, because he lied to them for so long. That was the basis of the relationship for the entirety of the first season and a lot of the second season. And so for him to start lying to them again, you can see that why that's such a huge betrayal for Eleanor and the rest of the group. Yeah.
It's dicey. Like, you as an audience member start to wonder who's the reliable narrator, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, is this our Michael, or, I mean, literally, is this Michael, Vicky in a Michael suit, or is even our Michael the Michael we thought our Michael was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just said a Jason line. Eleanor asked Janet to create a demon lie detector. That's a cool little metal prop.
Yeah, that was this crazy thing. We got things made. I forget where we got it machined, but I think it was like a couple different things.
But
we,
like,
put
from
it together.
Scratch. That's not something that they bought off Stargate SG-1 plug for my new podcast.
No, that wasn't. No, that wasn't. Yeah, like a prop that was laying around that Shatner touched or whatever. No, that was. It wasn't like an Amazon buy. It was, and, you know, and it's. Gay Parellos will have, like, meetings and, like, hey, Mike, what do you think? I don't remember, but sometimes it's, like, perfect the first time. Sometimes it's, like, tweak it a little bit. But always when it comes to set, it's, like, yeah, that makes sense. That works for what we're doing.
Amazing.
And I think it actually had, like, a laser pointer in there.
Something lights up.
Something was in there, yeah. Or at least the front of it, yeah.
Janet bloops in. She'll try to make a lie detector, but she's not sure if you're going to do it. She's busy running the universe and things are crumbling. She also just had to put down Daisy the horse blob. That exchange of her saying, like, I won't go into details, but she fought back. I had to twist her head off. Sorry, no more details. She did thrash. She thrashed. Like, that's more torture, right? Like,
yeah.
That's, I mean, obviously,
exactly.
We're about to learn who that is, but it's sort of fascinating. There are just too many good lines to talk about, but, like, maybe one of my favorite of the series is Eleanor proposes getting the truth out of Glenn by getting him drunk. What goes best with pig urine? And Jason Mendoza, as though it's a rock solid fact, says coconut rum. Like, I've done it.
Yeah.
I've tried it.
Absolutely.
Like, of all the possibilities I underwent, coconut rum.
No explanation. Yeah.
Without hesitation.
No context.
He had that chambered. Oh, coconut rum.
And again, just try and be helpful.
And it's fact.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's listen to a clip of this perfect, perfect show.
Why don't we just get him drunk so he starts blabbing? I mean, what goes best with pig urine?
Coconut rum.
That won't work on a demon. I'll try and make a lie detector.
Oh, no. Damn it.
What's going on in there?
I touched the dang diaper.
Get back in that room. So Michael saw the suit. Big deal. I still think you're forking with us. I think this is just like when the bad place sent us Linda, who turned out to be some super jacked punching guy, and just like him, you got busted.
That's the thing. The puncher didn't get busted. It worked exactly as planned. The whole thing was a diversion to get real Michael out and sneak the imposter in on a train. It must have happened during the handoff. While Janet was handcuffing Chris, a bunch of demons must have grabbed Michael, yanked him away, and then Vicky, in the Michael suit, walked back out. You never would have known the difference. Also, when Chris got back, I saw Sean and him celebrating. Why would they be happy if he wasn't supposed to get caught?
Man, I love a good sabotage.
Or is that exactly what you want us to think?
Motherforker, I knew there was something weird about that puncher. I said that to Michael. And he dismissed it.
Yeah, see what I mean?
Don't go anywhere. Come on.
That was so funny, Josh Siegel. It's so good.
Oh. Call yourself a bad actor. Come on.
Incredible.
I mean, it's really Glenn.
Yeah, it's really
Glenn. And in a sense, shut up, Glenn.
also, you're increasing frustration at Jason saying, or is that exactly what you want us to think?
That's
is also
game.
Incredible. Yeah.
At first, you're like confused by it.
Yeah.
That is what I want you to do. That is what I want you to think. It's a very fun game that you've built in for him there. I don't know what you would term this, and I'm curious how you talked about it in the room. We see a flashback, but it's a suppositional flashback. It's a flashback of things that did not happen. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. That's what I think.
It's Rashomon-y or
exactly.
That's true. To keep up the ruse in the game and the thrillerness of it all, we wanted to again establish that both of these characters are unreliable narrators.
Okay.
And so when you see a flashback told from their point of view, you should watch it sort of understand with a little bit of skepticism, understanding that it may not be true depending on who you want to believe in the story.
Right. It's fun to see people we like in the flashbacks, Luke Gulden and Rachel Winfrey, Jamie Williamson and Bamba John Bamba. We shot more of that scene of us celebrating. I hand a cognac or whatever, Bad Place cognac, to Chris Baker, and we toast. And I think there was actually even a, you pop in and like, what are we drinking? And there was a Shut Up Glenn there too. And
yeah.
I think we started chanting Shut Up Glenn, didn't we?
Yeah, we started
that
chanting.
It
all got cut. That was going to be the cliffhanger of episode 2.
Oh, that's right.
It was going to be like, oh, what is the Bad Place up to? Why are they celebrating? And I think for a couple of reasons. One is because, you know, we gave Drew Goddard a 90-minute script and asked him to make it all happen in 45 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, 45, that's right.
And then also, I think, you know, Mike maybe started to fear, oh, is our audience, who is very savvy, are they going to be ahead of us if we give them this information already that Sean and Chris are celebrating? Are they going to run with that and see where we've gone? So, yeah, we lost it. As far as I understand it, we lost it from episode 2, and now it appears only in this quickie flashback form.
Interesting. Hmm. Eleanor proposes taking off Michael's suit. Janet lets us know the rules, that only a demon can take off his own suit, and it's like a very complicated bra. We learn for the very first time, I think, that Michael is a 6,000-foot-tall fire squid with tentacles and teeth everywhere. He's on fire with a very long neck. There's a smell. There's lots of juice. There's so much juice.
6,000 feet tall was very important to Mike Schur.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he said that number just one day when we were talking about this, and then we needed to stick with that number. There was a writer on the show who I love very much named Dan Schofield,
sure.
Beautiful, exacting Dan Schofield, who protested a lot about him being 6,000 feet tall. I remember one day we were talking about it, and Dan goes, I just want to let you know, that's 17 times the size of Godzilla.
That's like a ridiculous measure.
Only Dan would have any idea as to like how many Godzillas that was.
He definitely Googled the funniest thing to say.
but Mike said, no, it's absolutely got to be 6,000 feet tall. And so he stuck with it.
In a very human moment, I guess, Michael is reticent to reveal himself because, A, they'll never think him the same way again. And also, the experiment will be blown because the human participants in this new medium place Mindy St. Clair experiment will see the 6,000-foot tall. Like, that's a kind of almost a plot. I know it's a Mike thing, but it's like it's unavoidable that you'd see that. Like, if that suddenly burst through the roof of the building or whatever.
The whole town would know.
So they introduce Glenn to the lie detector. They ask Glenn his name. He says, well, everybody calls me Glenn. But on my demon certificate, it says, snakes pour forth from his anus. Boom. Yeah. Did you get shot with goo? Probably not.
The
goo,
I didn't.
Yeah.
No, I caused goo. Mm-hmm. And even though it was just a fully scripted thing, I did go around and apologize, you know, as an actor and a person, for them all having to endure getting shot with a goo gun.
Which is what it is, right? It looks like the reverse of a fire extinguisher, sort of. It's sort of a tube, and it's filled with air, and they boom it. What's the goo, Tom? Is that you guys?
So the actual goo that got shot was special effects Virgil. So I think he had like four different cannons. So one would shoot at each like human, at each cockroach or whatever.
I would love to see that image, you know, of like the, if you widen out from the, yeah, the like, set and see that ready to go.
If you were our actors were and you look the opposite direction, it's kind of scary because it's like, that's just pointed right at my face.
Right.
And we didn't do it a ton of times. We did it maybe twice.
Yeah,
like, because it would have been such a pain to clean up.
Yeah, because I remember cleaning it up once. So that part is special effects. But for some reason, just because this is TV, we don't shoot in order. We did do a couple of scenes at the beginning of that day that was post-goo explosion, but we had not shot blue goo all over the house yet. And so we have... we had a few different types of goo to the point where it's like almost like blue silly putty that could be like in like a little bucket that would be a kid's toy. And then we had these like little blue silicone, like dried up like pools made. Like if you like spilled a drink and it was blue on a table. Like we had a bunch of those,
yeah,
but they were sticky. So we were sticking those all over the place. And we had the silly putty type stuff that was dripping around. And then we used some of the like the buckets that Virgil and special effects had just to add. So there's just like blue stuff everywhere. And then we had to like clean it all up because the next scene was the house cleaned. And a quick little story about why KB is the world's best person. Mm-hmm. So we had shot the house messy and then we're rehearsing to do the house clean, but it's like a lot of stuff. So we're like, hey, everybody just quietly like clean up while we rehearse. And KB's like doing her lines and then just like cleaning up around her.
And then like cleaning her area?
She's cleaning up her area. And then like in between the rehearsal takes, it's like, girl, I got it. You don't need to do this. She's like, I'm just standing here. There's no reason I can't help clean up. I was like, okay, you're just so amazing.
Pretty all right, huh?
During rehearsal, she's cleaning up the goo that's around her. She's like, here you go, I got a handful. I was like, oh my God, thank you.
We learn more rules that demons can't die. Glenn will reconstitute over the next few months. He'll go through all the predictable stages of demon growth. Larvae, slug monster, spooky little girl, teenage boy, giant ball of tongues, social media CEO, and then finally demon.
We had two takes. The other one, instead of social media CEO, is NFL team owner.
Oh.
That one got cut for obvious reasons.
Not that obvious. Except that maybe you spent some of that capital with 1-877 cars for kids.
It's possible. Oh, yeah.
All of my friends have texted me how amazing that joke was.
Oh my goodness.
When I read it, I was like, I hope this makes it in. This is so good.
You've given me ridiculous things to say for 4 years. And that may be the most play I've gotten on Twitter about a specific line, including I'm a naughty bitch or butthole spiders or any of it.
Bye, bitch.
Yeah. Bye, bitch. All of it. Yeah. Michael says, we're good. You know, we'll figure this out. Eleanor's like, we're not good. Things are not good. And she goes to take a walk and she runs into her touchstone. Chidi is quietly in town square trying to make the world better by learning, you know, training himself to draw better horses so that that will never happen again. And she says a wonderful line, like, making yourself suffer so that the world can
be
better.
Making yourself miserable so that the world is a better place.
Is about the most
Chidi thing you can do.
Yeah. That's pretty gorgeous.
That scene was, I think, really hard to write because we did like four or five versions of that before we settled on one that we all liked. And I think that it was, we were trying to understand what Eleanor could glean from this conversation with Chidi that would allow her to go back and be inspired and understand what she needed to do, what the course of action was going to be with Michael. And so we had like four or five versions of interactions that just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And we finally realized that maybe that was what sort of moved her hand.
I think, we had a lot of versions where, you know, it was, because there's a version of that scene where it's set up for Chidi to either on purpose give her the answer to her problem or accidentally give her the answer to her problem and off she goes to solve it. But I think we wanted her to have an interaction with him just on a human level, even though she's pretending to not be human in that scene, and come back not with an answer, to just as a leader continue to be challenged and she doesn't have the answer yet. And they, you know, played the hell out of it and it ended up being this quiet, lovely scene between two old friends, one of whom doesn't know that they're old friends. And,
yeah,
you know,
all of those scenes between Eleanor and Chidi in these first few episodes are automatically charged with that kind of like melancholy.
Yeah.
Sadness.
It's sweet though. She says, I know this mood of yours. And he's like, like, and not a suspicious thing. Just like, what do you mean? She's like, from your file. Yeah. Like she's got a cover. It's really very sweet. Just prior to that, you know, Janet's feeling like she's out of control and not doing stuff, Jason comforts her by saying, like, you're just trying to help us. I'm here for you, girl. And they hug. She doesn't say, not a girl. I wonder, in shooting it, was it ever tempting to have her say it and just cut it out? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should have done that.
No, no, no.
talk to Morgan, man.
Oh, Morgan did such a great job in this episode. My goodness.
He really did.
Yeah. I mean, to be funny and tense at the same time, I think, as a director, must be just so hard. And of course, he's like so unflappable in every situation. I mean, or at least he's all the way up there. I can't see his face all the time. But he's a tall man. Yeah. He just seems like he's, you know, just quietly coming in. He's got his tablet, and he's like, try this.
See what you can do.
But yeah, he got some lovely performances out of the real actors, and then he did
and
his best.
You.
Yeah,
come on, man. this another evidence of this being the smartest, dumbest show on television. Chidi and Eleanor have this wonderful scene where, as you say, it's two old friends, only one of whom knows their old friends, and they connect. And then you immediately go to a joke of her starting to exit and then craving this still heaping platter of nachos. He says, do you want to? And she said, yeah. And she picks it up and she leaves. Seconds later, she arrives at the house with the plate empty. That's so stupid. She just ate 2.5 pounds of nachos.
That's right.
On her walk over to Mindy's. Like, that's so dumb, you guys.
I remember that being a question on set because food is props. Sure. And it was Julie Witherington who like runs the set. She's like, well, is this clean? Is there like anything? Is there like a few? Like, like the nacho like percentage was definitely discussed. Like,
oh, I don't have
and I think it's just like a bit of like cheese and like sauce. Nothing, like it's a pretty clean plate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels also very character-based that KB had decided in this situation, Eleanor is finishing that plate. She's not waiting. She's not sharing.
Such interesting stuff happens next. Michael resolves that he has a better idea. He's going to sacrifice himself to prove that he is who he says he is. He's going to blow himself up. Chidi can stay in the experiment, and Chidi is their best chance. And he says, there's literally nothing I can say that will make you realize that I'm really me. And then we see Jason's eyes go like, wait, what? There's something happened a minute ago. Let me think about that, you know? And Michael says, oh boy, this is going to suck. Hopefully I'm going to see you all in a few months. Good luck. Oh, and make sure you get all of me into the container or I might come back way shorter and that would bum me out. Just sort of halting, what Ted does, that all comes out in like fits and spurts and he's procrastinating a little bit. Like he doesn't want to do this but he does not want to be shorter when he comes back. Like means that.
That's important.
It's just so perfect.
He's 6,000 feet tall.
I mean, he does not want
to. He's a tall guy.
And just then, Jason slaps magnetic handcuffs on Janet, and it's revealed that Janet has been bad Janet for a little while.
Yeah.
She blurts, oh, crud nuts. and we cut to break. It's a giant reveal, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a giant reveal that involves a flashback, just as one on the train was you know, a suppositional flashback. Oh, this could have happened. It's the same where, but a different thing happens, right? What happens on the train? It wasn't that
there was two bad Janets. One bad Janet waited with everybody on the platform while another bad Janet hit on the train. And when Michael wasn't there, wasn't looking, bad Janet came out and marbleized good Janet and took her place.
Hands the marble to Chris Baker.
And palms it and then walks away. And it's just like a smooth transition and she walks back out.
Very interesting.
And then it's fun to sort of replay all the times that you've seen bad Janet as good Janet in the previous episodes and in this episode. Also, it explains sort of why she exploded Glenn. It explains how she got the group to mistrust Eleanor's leadership skills. It's all of that.
It's so many things, too many to talk about. But Darcy was holding her hands a little weird as bad Janet on purpose. I think normally she holds her left thumb in her resting position. I believe that she was holding her right thumb throughout this.
Wow. That's amazing.
I texted about it with her last night, and she's like, sort of, yes. I just wanted it to not be completely perfect. And there are tons of other like when you look back, realizing that that's been bad Janet since that handoff, Janet gently tells Eleanor that she's kind of pooching it. Like, Janet would not have said that.
No.
Right.
In 402 at the fountain in the Huntington, when Janet asks Jason for space, effectively breaking up with him, like, that's bad Janet trying to distance herself from a possible spoiler event,
right,
but also trying to torture him. And then 100% in that same episode, when she says she doesn't mean to pile on, but the Jacksonville Jaguars cut Blake Bortles, she's genuinely sorry. Like, that's torture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad Janet poking him with a stick. She also tortured Tahani a little bit, right? She suggested that that Tahani and John work it out different ways.
Yeah, yeah. That's one where what we think is good Janet, but is actually bad Janet, is doing her best to, as subtly as possible, make the whole experiment, you know, get off the rails. And she gets Tahani in her head about one of the worst relationships of her life. And you know, hopefully, you look back and you say, "Oh, okay, that's why Janet didn't quite seem like the person we know."
I have a script question. Jason says, Michael said there's nothing he could say that would make you realize he's really him, but Janet does have a thing she can say that does make me realize she is really not her. Were those punctuations in there? Were they underlined or italicized? Or all, is that Manny, all Manny?
All Manny has seen.
Really?
Yeah, he's incredible. He nailed that line, I think, the first time out of the gate and just kept nailing it on every take.
It's very clear, his delivery of the line. It's also super confusing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, incredibly.
And I think Eleanor goes like, what?
This was, I think, the last episode that went out to critics. And I've been, you know, because we're all done with the writing and creating it, I've just checked in with what people are saying. And there's a lot of like speculation about, like,
people are starting to guess, right?
They're starting to guess. They're starting.
I don't mean correctly. I mean, they're starting to suppose.
And
to
they really think they know where it's all headed after this. And to quote you, they super don't. That's what's exciting to me, because you have this great action moment coming out of this episode, and they are legit heading into the unknown, and so is the show, and I'm excited for people to see that.
We see Jason and Jason in his bad place suit from the Museum of Low-Grade Human Crappiness or whatever it was, super sharp suit. We say Michael basically as Dick Tracy.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's his action figure outfit.
And a fish tank full of Glenn. Oh, and I'm just remembering that I forgot to mention that you blurp at one point and bad Janet gives a shut up Glenn.
That's right. That's right.
She's a bowl of
I had to do that at the
fish tank.
An aquarium of goo.
Yeah. At the table read, there was a line that's like, blub, blub. So I rehearsed that too much. But that I don't know if that was, that was me in the cut.
And it's such a wonderful, like, yes, Jason's just been heroic, albeit brief. But there's a great exchange where Eleanor and Michael say to one another, like, are you up for what's next? And it's like, I don't know. Maybe not. Like, we're going to see. The point is to give it our best, right?
Yeah.
The point is to try. Let's go get our girl.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Not a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cord Jefferson, what's good?
What is good? I think that therapy is good. I think that maybe it's a cliche for a writer in Los Angeles to say that he really likes therapy, but I do. I think it's very important, and it has changed my life in innumerable ways. So it's been on my mind a lot lately. So therapy is good. Everybody should get therapy. Therapy should be free. It should be government subsidized.
Yeah.
I talked to a doctor one time who his specialty was STDs, and I asked him what he would do if he got like a $300 million government grant, what he would do to lower the rate of STDs in the United States. And he said he would just put it all toward free therapy.
Wow.
He was like, that's all I would do. That's where all of this stems from, is just mental health. And he's like, you can lower so many rates of like illness and disease if you just give people free therapy.
Oh my gosh. That seems doable, and yet let's see if we ever do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Zawacki, what's good?
Last time I was here, I talked about peanut butter sandwiches and how those were pretty solid from eating them on set, because we have a restaurant, PB&J, and that's it. So I was thinking about it on the drive over. As far as just like childhood food, I haven't had it in a while. That's really good. I had mac and cheese for the first time recently. Granted, it was like bougie, like
you
bacon.
You ate mac and cheese for the first time?
First time in a long time recently. Oh, okay. For the first time in a very long time recently. And granted, it was like bougie bacon mac and cheese from like a fancy restaurant. I don't know why. I wasn't that hungry. I was like, let's do some mac and cheese. And I don't know why I've just been taking like 20 years off these good childhood foods. But mac and cheese, people, don't sleep on it.
Yeah, man. I think, I mean...
It's like a little bowl of therapy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's true. That is true.
Stupid.
I can see that.
Yeah. Stupid.
That also should be government subsidized. I think everyone yeah. get mac and cheese.
Yeah, instead of just government cheese.
No.
Throw some noodles in there.
Josh Siegel, what's good?
I will say that for me, what's good is I am, this is so corny, but I'm constantly blown away by the innocence of my own children. We recently, as of the recording of this, we had the experience where we went to the Emmys and, you know, some lovely people walked away with some lovely trophies. And I was like, just so happy to be there. And with, the Good Place gang, and everyone had put on fancy outfits, and it was lovely to be in that event. And didn't walk away with the statues, but, had a blast anyway. But my youngest daughter took it pretty hard. My 9-year-old daughter. And she was like, why? But you did such a good job. And daddy, why didn't they? And you know, and then, you know, I told her, which is a line that, you know, I've heard, I didn't come up with this, you know, I've heard in passing a few times where I just repeated it. And I was like, well, it's okay. It was really just an honor to be there and be talked about nicely. And also, you know, honestly, awards and contests for art is a little bit silly. It's a little bit silly to have a contest for art where you're comparing those things. And she looked up with wide eyes, tears in her eyes, and asked very, very gently, well, then why do they do it?
Oh, my God. That's amazing. How old is she?
She's 9.
Oh, that's
she's 9,
amazing.
But she's a real sweetie.
That's
and
amazing.
So then, you know, I was like, well, it's fun to dress up. It's fun to dress up. That was the answer.
That's the cleanest answer to that.
It's silly, but it's still fun to go to the party.
Yeah. So, you know, I know it's kind of a your basic answer, but I am blown away by them.
Yeah.
And Max, Jake, Zoe, if you ever listen to this, I'm sorry that... my fellow coworkers thought it'd be funny if I said that I drank pig urine. I don't really. I don't.
Daddy doesn't like it.
Yeah.
It's not real.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Thank you for listening. The point is to try. Now go do something good.
Well, Neutral Janet, Mark just nailed another episode of The Good Place, the podcast.
That was an episode. And now one less episode is left. End of calculation.
Ha ha ha. How do you think that one went, Neutral Janet?
It went approximately 1 hour and is now over. End of answer.
Helpful as always. We'll see you next time. The Good Place, the podcast, is hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
This podcast is produced by Grant Rudder.
Edited and produced by Trey Booty.
Music composed by David Schwartz. It was written and produced by Lizzie Pace. End of credits.